It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we talk to the author of an investigation finding that kids with asthma in low-income, predominantly black neighborhoods in Milwaukee are more likely to have bad health outcomes than kids in other communities. First, the Russian invasion of Ukraine has been raging for more than 6 months now, killing tens of thousands and displacing millions of Ukrainians. In a new series, Washington Post reporters spent months looking into the lead-up to the invasion to learn how the war came to be. They found that the U.S. had trouble convincing allies and some Ukrainian officials that an invasion was coming, and they say Russian spies were responsible for a number of intelligence failures early on, complicating Russia's hopes for a quick takeover. The series is called Russia's Gamble, and we're talking about some of the new information it's uncovered, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for our guests about the days in the run-up to the Russian invasion? What was happening? What had people around the world confused? Did you yourself believe that this invasion was coming? Did it come as a surprise to you? What do you think of the U.S.-led response by NATO? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Paul Soni is a national security reporter for The Washington Post, and Greg Miller is an investigative foreign correspondent for The Post based in London. They both reported stories for the Russia's Gamble series. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And Greg, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Paul, let's start with intelligence operations in the run-up to the war. The U.S., you write, very convinced that this invasion was coming, had trouble persuading European allies and Ukrainians. Can you talk about why the U.S. was on a different page, what turned out to be the right page from many other countries?
I think the primary reason for that is that the U.S. had intelligence that the Europeans and the Ukrainians didn't have, that reached into the Russian leadership inner circle. They, early on, our reporting has shown, had basically what amounted to Russia's war plans. They had that as early as last October. And then they worked to fill out their intelligence picture as the months leading up to the war unfolded. And so the U.S. shared some of that information with the European allies as well as the Ukrainians, but not potentially to a degree that would convince them. And I think one of the problems that the U.S. faced is that a lot of European and Ukrainian officials were looking at the number of forces that Russia had amassed in Belarus and along the Ukrainian border and said, you know, they can't occupy Ukraine with this number of people. They're not going to succeed in taking Kyiv. You know, Putin couldn't possibly be that misguided to do this. And so that kind of influenced their thinking on whether he would do it.
And Paul, before we turn to what was happening on the Russian side of things, the reporting included skepticism from some Europeans of your U.S. intelligence based going back to the Iraq war. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think one of the problems that U.S. intelligence faced going into this, trying to get a consensus among allies, is that there are doubts about U.S. intelligence in Europe, particularly in Europe. And a lot of that goes back to the weapons of mass destruction claims in the run-up to the Iraq war. I think Europeans have a reaction to American claims that something big is going to happen, or we need to combat something big in certain cases. And often, U.S. regulations and law don't allow U.S. officials to share the sources and methods of the information that they are gathering. So they will go to their European colleagues and say, hey, we know this. They will put some shading on that, but they can't say how they know it. And of course, when they can't say how they know it, that leads to doubts among the people that they're talking to. And I think that's exactly a lot of what you saw among German and French officials and even some Ukrainian officials in the lead up to this war.
Greg, let's look at the Russian side of things now. I was amazed in your reporting how extensive Russian intelligence operations were in Ukraine pre-war. Can you talk about the scope of their activities?
Well, I think one of the lines we use in the story is that there's really nothing outside of surveillance inside Russia matters more to its largest security service, the FSB. This is penetrating, undermining, surveilling, spying on Ukraine is one of its main jobs. And it probably, I think it's safe to say, has been quite good at that and has devoted an inordinate resources to this. Many Ukrainian institutions have been riddled with Russian penetrations for many, many years. And senior Ukrainian officials will even tell you this. So, I mean, Ukraine is obviously Russia's neighbor, was a former Soviet state. It matters a great deal to the Kremlin and was a very high priority for Russian intelligence for a very, very long time.
And yet, the information that went to Vladimir Putin and top planners doesn't seem to have been very accurate or very predictive. What, from the Russian intelligence perspective, went wrong?
You know, I think that there's a couple really important things that went wrong. One is that that proximity and that closeness to Ukraine and that kind of even that relationship between Russia and Ukraine as states and former members of the Soviet Union, I think created blind spots for Russian intelligence and for Russian officials. They view Ukraine in very disparaging terms. They see Ukraine as an incompetent and incapable and corrupt, barely younger sibling kind of. And so they look down on Ukraine and think that this is an easy country to deal with, easy to understand. We don't have to really think too hard about this problem. And they were wrong. They were wrong about how much Ukraine, during its fairly brief history as a separate country, had started to see itself as separate from Russia and would resist it. There's another big problem, though, that we talk about in the story, which is more systemic, which has to do with when you are an intelligence service in Russia and you report to Vladimir Putin in a completely autocratic state, what is the incentive for you to bring hard truths to that leader? I mean, there really isn't much. And many officials that we talk to in the United States, in Ukraine, and in Europe really believe that even if the FSB had accurate intelligence on just how fiercely Ukraine would resist any military move against Kyiv, it would have been hard to imagine the FSB really pushing that point with Putin for fear of how he would take that news, for fear of how he would regard that.
Talking to Greg Miller and Paul Soni from The Washington Post, two of the many reporters on the Russia's Gamble series, a very in-depth look at the run-up to the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the early days of that war. You can join in with your questions for our guests, your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Paul, in the run-up here, Ukrainian President Zelensky in a difficult position. How did he react to this U.S. prediction of an invasion that it appears he didn't think was coming? What was his reaction? How did he prepare his country?
So Zelensky did not go out and warn the Ukrainian public that a war was coming. He didn't say, pack your bags, figure out your exit plan, hoard your supplies, put money under your couch. He didn't do any of that. In fact, to some degree, he did the opposite, which was not to exclude the possibility of a full-scale Russian invasion. His line was something along the lines of, you know, we've already been at war with Russia in the eastern Donbass region since 2014, and the likelihood and possibility of a big escalation in that war is something we always have to be cognizant of. But he wasn't going out and saying, hey, Russia is going to launch a multi-pronged invasion, including an attack on Kyiv at any moment. He certainly was not saying that. In fact, in an appearance with the Estonian president, I think it was three days before the invasion, he sort of expressly said he didn't expect a full-scale invasion. And his defense minister also in the days before the war said as much. So what you saw was the Zelensky government, despite quite specific warnings from the United States, not only that there would be a large-scale invasion, but that even down to which airport outside of Kyiv would be the Russian bridgehead, they were downplaying the likelihood. And as a result, when the war did start, Ukrainians were completely caught off guard. You saw those images of those traffic jams coming out of Kyiv, hundreds of thousands of people pouring into the streets trying to escape. People really did not think it was going to happen. And when you asked Zelensky, we did ask Zelensky why, given what the U.S. was telling you, why didn't you go out and warn people? One of the things that he and his officials have said is that they believed that causing panic in the run-up to the war would have actually aided Russia's desire to overthrow the government and collapse the leadership of Ukraine's defense. So if there was a situation where the Ukrainian government had no money for weeks because of those warnings, people were sending their money out of the country, people were leaving towns and cities across the country, then his government might have actually collapsed in the run-up to the invasion, and Russia would have had a much easier time taking territory and pushing into Kyiv in the middle of that kind of tumult and a sort of internal political war in Ukraine that would have erupted over that.
And Greg, Russia was very much prepared, it seemed like, for that kind of collapse. In your reporting, you talk about, specific instructions for spies like, hey, head out of your safe house now, but leave your keys for the next guy who's going to help with the takeover. I mean, they were very much ready, I think, within the first couple of weeks to be running Ukraine, right?
That's right. I was just going to say that to come in behind Paul's point there, there's a lot of evidence that this was the central to Russia's expectations and their plan, that there would be panic in Ukraine, that Zelensky, a former television comedian, was not going to be a statesman, was not going to stand his ground and would quickly flee, and the rest of the government would collapse in a matter of days. And, we start our story with some pretty amazing intercepted communications that Ukraine and other intelligence agencies shared with us that show that Russian spies were basically planning their accommodations in Kyiv, in the Ukrainian capital, in the final week before the invasion began. They were so certain that they were going to be there controlling the levers of power that they were basically focused on where were they going to stay, which apartment, and they were kind of pushing their paid informants and other assets out of the capital temporarily so that they could move in. And as you said, that in some cases they left instructions saying, get out of your apartment, but leave your keys behind because somebody's coming in to use it.
We're talking to Greg Miller and Paul Soni, two reporters behind the Washington Post's extensive new series, Russia's Gamble, all about the run-up to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, some of the early days of the war. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question for our guests about what happened in those days about 6 months ago and why? What do you think about the U.S. response role in warning of this invasion in supplying Ukraine along the way? Call in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Coming up, the early days of Ukrainian resistance to Russia. That's next on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk about the Washington Post new series, Russia's Gamble, looking at the run-up and the early days in the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Paul Soni and Greg Miller are two of the reporters behind the series for the Post. They stay with us. Now, in the run-up to this invasion, Paul, I think the question on everyone's mind around the world, Russia, Ukraine itself, NATO allies, the U.S. was, would Ukraine's military hold together? Would it put up a resistance? Russia thought no, for sure. I think everybody else is a question mark. Can you talk about the early days of Ukraine's military resistance to the Russian invasion?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the ways that you can evaluate whether a military's defense is going to hold together is what is the political structure that military is reporting to. And I think part of the Russian thinking was that by causing chaos in the run-up to the invasion and by trying to scare Zelensky out of Kyiv and have his government collapse, then you would get a situation where the Ukrainian military was essentially reporting to people who were gone, who were unavailable, who were in various forms of flight, somewhat similar to what you saw in Afghanistan in 2021. And that didn't happen. Zelensky didn't leave Kyiv. His main advisors in charge of security issues did not leave Kyiv. None of the military leadership left Kyiv. And there was a profound will to fight not only among Ukrainian soldiers, but also among rank and file Ukrainians who had no military experience, but across the country in droves signed up to take up arms and resist a Russian invasion. So I think that is perhaps something that U.S. officials and that Washington underestimated. I think they had a great gauge on the fact that a war was going to happen, the fact that Putin was planning this, the plans were serious, and that it was going to happen, around the time that it did. What they didn't really have a great gauge on was how was the Russian military going to perform, and how was the Ukrainian military and everyday Ukrainians and the Ukrainian political leadership going to respond. And it turned out that some of the American assumptions about that were wrong.
Greg, what do we know about Putin's reaction to what appears to have been a surprise that the Ukrainian military, as Paul was just saying, did cohere, did resist that invasion?
That's a big question and a mostly unanswered one, I think we have to admit. Russia has been, and Putin has been astonishingly effective at reinstating sort of Soviet-style repression on Russian society in a very short amount of time. So the amount of accurate information that comes out of Moscow is very limited and very problematic. We do know that there has been some kind of bloodletting within the military, that there has been changes in command in certain units and in certain locations. What's pretty surprising, though, is that all the U.S. and European and Ukrainian intelligence officials that we talked to, none of them thought that there had been any major repercussions for Russian intelligence, senior intelligence officials. In other words, if something goes this badly in most countries, the head of the CIA or the head of the MI6 is going to pay a price, or somebody in that chain of command. But that has not happened in Russia, as far as anybody knows. Those senior people are still in those jobs. The leader of the FSB is still there. The leader of the unit that was responsible for Ukraine is still there. They have sort of regrouped, much the way the Russian military has, and turned their attention to eastern Ukraine and sort of smaller bore operations, but they're still working this war.
And Greg, do we know what the Russian ideal end game was going to be if that invasion happened quickly? Was it complete annexation of Ukraine, a completely controlled puppet government, chopping off bits and pieces, some of all those? What were they trying to get out of this?
Yeah, I don't know if we have complete clarity on that. I know in our story, we write about how Russia appears to have had at least two possible puppet regimes positioned to move into Kyiv if the government in Ukraine had collapsed as Russia expected it would. There was one in the north that was built around a former very pro-Russian leader of Ukraine, and then there was another one positioned in the south. It's whether this was going to be a full annexation and a reincorporation of Ukraine into Russia, or it seems more likely that it would have ended up being just sort of installation of a regime completely subservient to Putin, much like we see now in Belarus.
Paul, with the benefit of hindsight, I think some of the impression I get from reporting out of this is, well, of course, this is going to fail. There's this series of intelligence blunders, logistical problems. From the reporting on the early days of the war, it seems like really Kyiv, the capital of Ukraine, was on a razor's edge. Can you talk about the battles a little bit that turned the tide here?
Yeah, I think this idea that this plan was a complete and utter folly and there was absolutely no way it would succeed. You can imagine a scenario where Zelensky immediately fled the capital, as did all of the other Ukrainian elites. The Ukrainian military didn't have commander, political people for the commanders to answer to. And there was a total vacuum in Kyiv that the Russians, if the Ukrainian, everyday Ukrainians were not resisting, might have been able to fill. So it's not an impossibility that this plan, to some degree, it was never going to be impossible with the number, never going to be possible with the number of troops that they had amassed to actually occupy a city the size of Kyiv, block to block. But to sort of topple the government and install some sort of other puppet regime and then pull back and see how that plays out, I don't think that was a total impossibility. And in the end, the Ukrainians didn't let the Russians take any territory in the Kyiv city limits. But for 5 to 6 weeks, they were right there on the border, in really incredibly violent and destructive battles, trying to push their way into the city, trying to push their way into the downtown area where Zelensky and all of the Ukrainian elites were housed. And there were a lot of moments there where Ukrainian commanders felt like they could really get into the city. This was not some sort of, they were so weak and didn't know what they were doing to such a degree that they couldn't actually do that. You know, Russia did have elite forces right on the border of Kyiv, people who were combat ready, paratroopers who knew what they were doing.
And Greg, just in our last minute, you've mentioned the difficulty of knowing what's going on inside Russia now. What to you, 6 months in, is the big unanswered question with just less than a minute to go?
Of course, the biggest unanswered question is how any of this ends or whether it does. I'm eager to get Paul's take on this question, too. But I think that the people I met with in Ukraine really think that this now looks like it's going to drag on for a very long time. No end in sight. And that's a tragedy for their country.
And Paul, just 30 seconds or so with your answer to that.
I think it's exactly right. We have no idea. It's pretty clear to everyone that Russia's initial plan did not go the way they had wanted. And so what they decide to make of this mess, where they decide to end it, what they decide is enough or not enough. We really have very little insight into that question.
Thanks to both of our guests for joining us today, Paul Soni and Greg Miller, reporters from The Washington Post, with us today to talk about their stories in the Post's extensive new series called Russia's Gamble, looking at the run-up to Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the early weeks of the war.